Chapter 20.
My Lord Kaidus, I disobeyed your instructions about where to search for the Jedi Council, and went back to the locations where Luke Skywalker had hideouts in his rebel days. I'm now on Endor. There's an old Imperial base here, just full of Force energy, even though the camp's been abandoned. The Jedi have been here very recently, but I don't know where they've gone. Yet.
Comm message from Tahiri Vela, Sith apprentice, to Darth Kaidus, Dark Lord of the Sith, and Chief of State of the Galactic Alliance. Caldabe Mandalore, a week later. Myrta and Orade had exchanged marriage vows that morning, Vevut said, and so it was high time to have a few drinks and celebrate. Fett heard about it from Bevine. If he allowed himself to think about it too much, it would eat at him. He sat in Slave One's cockpit, half listening to the HNE financial news, while he did the maintenance on his hut. Mandalore, self-sufficient and well able to pull itself up by its bootstraps minus Fett, went on thriving all around him.
You have to give her the stone. It won't change a thing, but at least she can sell it, and she might even listen to what it's got to say.
He fished in his belt pouch and held the oval stone up to the light from the viewscreen. A royal blue heart of fire, as rare as they came, 5 centimeters long and superbly cut. His broker had done pretty well to find it. If he held it just so, the rainbow of colors was complete. He peered into its heart with a magnifier from his HUD toolkit and admired the play of internal fire that created the iridescence. Geologists said it was due to microscopic bubbles of pinacolite trapped when the crystal was first formed, and also that the substance might have explained the stone's ability to store data from people who'd owned it. Kifar preferred the more mystic explanation, that it trapped a little bit of the soul of both giver and receiver. It definitely did record something. Gotob, the Barv was a Jedi, and Fett had worked that out even if Bevine didn't want to discuss it, could certainly skim Fett's unhappy marital history from it in painful detail. He wondered how much he'd burden Sintas if some of his soul got trapped in the magnificent blue stone.
You know the thing actually does it. You had proof.
Loud hammering on the side viewscreen made him look up. Bevine was standing on the hull, making impatient gestures.
Sopan, Fett said.
Get your shebs to your granddaughter's wedding feast, Bobica.
Bevine stood in the hatchway in his cobalt blue armor, with a dark navy leather kama, the traditional Mandalorian half-kilt. He didn't normally wear that. It was his holiday best for a special day.
It's a disgrace if you don't.
Fett held up the gem between thumb and forefinger.
Matches your Beskar gem.
For Myrta?
Sin.
Is that a good idea?
It's a goodbye. I'm not delusional.
Bevine just shook his head.
She'd probably prefer one of your properties.
I'm way ahead.
Fett reached inside his dump pouch and slid out a flimsy envelope, the kind old-fashioned lawyers used.
Portfolio here of shares and property. She'll never have to worry about bounty hunting again. When you give it to her, say that...
Shob, Bobica, Bevine said. Tell her yourself. It's one errand I'm not running for you. But when you want to tell me what happened, I mean what really happened, then you know where I am.
Bevine jumped down off the airframe, Kama slapping against his plates, and stalked off. How did he think Fett could show up to celebrate her marriage with what Sintas had told her? It was better that the girl had a fresh start and got swept up in a clan that didn't have a reputation like the Fett one, or its remarkable bad luck.
Sintas won't want for anything, nor Myrta. It's the least I can do.
Fett went on tinkering with his helmet and wondering if Jaina Solo had what it took to deal with her brother.
What's the matter, Beau?
Said a voice behind him.
Don't you worry about security anymore?
He stopped. Sintas was right behind him. She wasn't going to leave his life in a tidy, anesthetized way. He'd been naive to think he could avoid the pain.
I can leave my hatch open here. I don't have to worry about Mondo's sin.
That's just what Jaster said. And look what happened to him. So, as soon as I get my memory back and I can see, you're gone again. Still angry?
No.
He waited for her to edge forward into the front of the cockpit and look at him. But she stayed aft.
I'm glad you're okay.
And why haven't you shown at Myrta's celebration?
Cowardice.
I told Myrta the truth. She's devastated.
You shouldn't have done it before her wedding.
Beau, I never made Aelin hate you. I never told her anything. That was the problem. She filled in the gaps too much. I should have explained, but I wanted us to get on with our lives. Forget you. Hey, you know.
I know.
But Fett knew that he could have stayed in touch, or visited. And then Aelin would at least have seen he was around, and not totally callous. Just mostly. It might not have made any difference in the end.
I'm not good at telling people things either.
If you'd told the magistrate why you shot him, you'd never have been convicted.
And have everyone know what he did to you? You didn't tell anyone. You didn't want it dragged out in public.
There was only one thing Fett could have done with a scumbag like Lenivar. He wasn't just any rapist, although that would have been bad enough. He was a journeyman protector, Fett's superior officer on Concord Dawn, a constable who should have been upholding the law, not betraying his uniform and Fett's trust.
If I could have killed him a few more times, I would have.
No, the only regrets Fett had were the stupid rows with Sin, the cruel things he'd asked about whether Aelin was really his, and all the words that couldn't be unsaid now. She would never have told him about Lenivar. Finding out for himself had been the tipping point.
Unrepentant, the magistrate said. You bet I was.
With the fights and recriminations and everything he owned taken by the courts, and then the exile, how did anyone repair a marriage after that? Better men did all the time, but he didn't know how. Sintas edged closer behind the pilot's seat. Fett thought it was better if she didn't have yet another illusion ruined.
I'd have gone anywhere with you, Beau,
she said.
I didn't care if we lost everything.
I know. I was the one who didn't have what it took.
The last time I saw your face, what were you? 19?
Close enough.
She was desperate to look at him. 50 odd years. He understood why she needed to, but it was still a bad idea for both of them. Being Sintas, she did it anyway. She slid around in front of his seat and looked into his eyes. Her mid-30s, perfect. Him, over 70, and with a savage life in those absent years that etched itself in every pore.
"Oh, Bo, whatever happened to you?"
"I survived."
She could have looked more shocked. She just seemed ripped up by regret, but not half as much as he was. She touched the scars on his cheek, scars that had been etched by the Sarlacc acid. It was another story he needed to tell her.
"Come and see Myrta," she said. "Please?"
"She'll give me the full number on why it was my fault for not telling her."
"No. She's a big girl now. She knows things are never as black and white as we want them to be."
Sintas had never expected him to be eloquent, which was a blessing right then. He handed her the envelope. That was the simplest bit.
"Got a few things for you."
"Bo, you don't have to do that."
"Just shut up and take it."
Shisa would have done this so much better. He could do anything with a grin and that accent.
"And I should have bought you one of these at the time. And this is yours anyway."
Fett went back to calibrating his HUD just so he didn't have to watch. Sin could do the strong and silent routine just as well as he could, as long as their eyes didn't meet.
"I know what's in the canister," she said, "and I can't look at it right now."
It was the only hollow image of the three of them as a family, in that short, idyllic time before it all collapsed.
"But you're insane to buy me the stone. I'm never worth that much."
"Sell it. It's yours."
"I've got the first one."
"Half of it. And a lot's happened since. So there'll be a different set of Fett memories in the Blue Stone, if you ever want to do some catching up."
Fett wondered if Myrta had taken her to visit Aelin's grave yet. The problem with Myrta telling Sintas that he'd gone to so much trouble to recover Aelin's body and then buried her with half of the Heart of Fire was that it made him look like a nice, normal, loving father. And however decent his motives were when he destroyed his marriage, he'd never been man enough in the years that followed to visit his family and try to repair the rift. It took more guts than facing an army.
"You get the life you deserve, Fett. Everyone does. Sin, after I left, did you find someone else?"
She was holding the blue Heart of Fire between both palms, one flat above, one below, almost as if she was rolling it, eyes a little distant, as if she'd already started listening to its silent voice.
"I did, Bo. More than once,"
she said at last.
"But in our line of work it never lasts, does it? You?"
"I don't remember,"
he lied. She could tell anyway.
"Let's go do the family thing, then."
Sintas put the stone in the hip pocket of her pants.
"Just this once."
He hadn't finished calibrating the HUD, but he put his helmet on anyway. And once it was on, he looked like the Bo she once knew and loved, and the lost years vanished for a brief time. They went to Myrta's feast. Maybe Sintas would do that Kifhar thing with the new Heart of Fire, and read and discover everything that had happened to him while they were apart, and what he just couldn't manage to tell her, even now. It was just 3 words, but it was 3 too many for Boba Fett. Novak Vevut's home, Keldabe, wedding feast of Mir Tegev and Ges Orade.
"I've found a use for Jedi," Carid bellowed. "I knew I would one day. Look!"
The line of ale bottles stretched the length of the Duraplast trestle table in Vevut's crowded courtyard. Jaina concentrated, knowing how critical the timing would be. Then she inhaled slowly, stepped back, and force-pulled all 30 caps off in a rapid sequence that popped and rattled like a Lewitt pyrocracker. Froth welled from the necks of the bottles. The guests showed their approval with shouts of
"Oya!" and "Kondosi!"
hammering their fists on the thigh plates of their armor. Jaina took a bow.
"Now you know why Jedi apprentices spend years in quiet contemplation and earnest study at the academy."
The celebratory feast was packed. Guests had spilled out from the courtyard onto the grass outside the low retaining wall. A man in gray armor had an animal with him, a predator with a deeply folded coat and 6 legs. When she passed, it looked up sharply as if it recognized her, and made plaintive grumbling noises, slapping its whip-like tail on the ground. Myrta edged through the crowd toward her, not looking radiant or blushing. Jaina could sense her misery, but she also knew the specific cause of it, because Sintas had told her. A single traumatic event, whose consequences had spiraled out of control, and finally fed into the crisis that now engulfed Jaina's own family, and much of the galaxy. It wasn't a direct causal chain, but it was so close and personal now that it might as well have been.
50-odd years ago. What was happening to us right then? Mom was growing up on Alderaan. Uncle Luke was on Tatooine. No idea what was coming 10 years down the line. Dad was probably learning to steal speeders. And Sintas, who none of us knew or even thought about until this year, was a teenager with a baby daughter going through the worst time of her life. And none of us knew that we'd end up on this collision course.
Myrta finally pushed through the sea of bodies and steered Jaina to a quieter corner.
"Babuir was here with Grandmama earlier, but I can't find them now," Myrta said.
"They've probably got some talking to do.
All I can think of now is, what if I'd killed him?"
"But you didn't."
"You don't understand, Jaina. It's all I can remember with my mama now. She built her whole life around hating Fett and making him pay, from the work she did to the man she married, and everything she taught me. I grew up on hatred."
"But you've changed all that, Myrta," Jaina said. "You stopped that cycle, didn't you? That takes some doing. Put it behind you. Live your life. I think Fett wants you to be happy, even if he doesn't give you any clues."
"I'm talking about what I nearly did. I was going to kill him. If your mother hadn't diverted my blaster back on Corellia, he'd be dead now."
Myrta hadn't struck Jaina as the kind of woman who worried about things like that. She was hard, pure and simple, an unsentimental and unforgiving woman. But in all that struggle to survive, and all the violence she had meted out, there remained someone who could challenge the core of her upbringing. It was an extraordinary strength.
"What-ifs can be corrosive," Jaina said. "You should..."
"It's not about me, Jaina. It's about you. How do you think it feels when you find out that none of the events happened the way you thought, or even happened at all, but you were prepared to kill your own flesh and blood on the strength of it?"
"You think I'm going to kill my brother. I think you need to hear from someone who nearly killed their own grandfather. Think about what it'll do to you. Myrta, he murdered your mother. He killed my aunt.
Jaina had an image of Jason in her mind as he once was, and then imagined bringing a lightsaber down across his neck. It made her unsteady for a moment.
Are you saying I should forgive him? Is that what this is all about?
No. I think there are things you can't forgive. But executing someone is a step beyond. And if you're thinking about it, just remember me.
Jaina seriously considered a little careful mind influence right then, just to stop Myrta being broken-hearted and guilt-ridden on her wedding day. But given Myrta's strength of will, Jaina was sure it would bounce right off her. She didn't even try.
No disrespect to your granddad, she said, but he wasn't totally blameless, was he? I can imagine how much damage it does to a marriage when something that awful happens, but other folks handle it differently. He could have, too. He could have stayed in touch, at least.
When you've got the blaster in your hand, and his back lined up in your crosswires, it doesn't feel like that. And things happened to him to make him that way. Maybe they happened to your brother, too.
I can't believe you're pleading for Jason,
Jaina said.
If he walked in here now, wouldn't you shoot him dead for what he did to your mother?
Yes, I would.
Myrta had a few wild flowers twisted in her hair, but she was still in yellow battle armor. It was incongruous and very Mandalorian.
Without a second thought, I'm Fett's granddaughter in every sense. But that doesn't mean it's the right thing for you to shoot him. Do whatever you can to get him locked up and treated or whatever. Maybe let fate take its course and leave someone else to kill him.
And that was incongruously Mandalorian, too. Family, not bloodline, but the living fabric of being a family, meant a lot to them. And maybe that was the root of Myrta's anguish.
She's worrying about me going through what she nearly did.
Jaina was taken aback. That dualistic Mandalorian mindset, extreme violence, profound love, always threw her.
I'll never forget what you're trying to do for me,
she said at last. Myrta looked suddenly embarrassed, as if she didn't want to be caught being kind.
Funny how I've only really got to grips with my own messy family since I've been talking to a Shabla Jedi.
I've learned more than I ever thought I would from all of you, and I don't mean saber tactics either.
There was nothing like living close to someone who wanted to kill their granddad to make you look at the lightsaber in your own hand and ask if you could really use it on your own brother. Jaina had been thrown up against the choices and consequences here in a way that she would never have experienced in her own polite, restrained, reasonable Jedi family. She was also a lot clearer about what it meant to be a Jedi, because of the mirror held up to her by Mandalore. Everyone needed to see themselves as others saw them. But she still didn't know exactly what she should do when it came to stopping Jason on his headlong rush to disaster.
I'll be back later, Jaina said. I need to mull over what you've said. But please, go back to the party and be happy today. Promise me?
Myrta didn't have a lot of happiness genes. That was obvious. But she managed to smile and clasped Jaina's arm.
Let's never be in opposing armies. But if we are, we'll make sure we avoid each other. Deal?
Deal,
said Jaina. Jaina knew she wouldn't have understood that a couple of weeks earlier, but she certainly did now. She passed Sintas, walking up the dirt track toward Vevut's house from the center of Kaldabe. She was clutching something tight in her right hand as she ambled along slowly, looking down at her fist as if she had a comlink in it. But when Jaina got close to her, she could see that it had to be something much smaller than that. Sintas looked up as if she hadn't seen Jaina coming, and almost stepped out of her way. There were tears in her eyes. Jaina would have been stunned if there hadn't been. Losing your memory was bad enough, but having to recover memories as bad as hers was living through pain twice.
"Sorry,"
Sintas said, unfolding her fingers. There was a huge, deep blue gem in her palm, shot with brilliant rainbow colors as it caught the light.
"Just been doing some catching up."
Sintas walked on. Jaina marveled at the ability of beings to recover from the worst experiences, and hoped her own family would be able to find some of that resilience. She could still hear the wedding guests singing, that same plaintive ballad she'd heard the other night. She chose to hear it as a song of love and homesickness. It would always sound that way to her, for as long as she lived. Wayubat Tapcalf, Kaldabe. If Fett had wanted a drink in the Tapcalf today, he'd have had to get it from behind the bar himself. Everyone was at his granddaughter's wedding feast, including the barkeep, Chom. Fett waited for Admiral Dalla, thinking that it was a perfect freeze frame from his life, that he was waiting to do business here while his granddaughter and his ex-wife were doing the right thing and celebrating the marriage. He watched Dalla walk through the doors, reflected in the mirrored panel next to his table.
"I've been arranging Gil's funeral with Raj," she said.
"Did that involve a strafing run over Bastion?"
"The somewhat depleted Council of Moffs couldn't see why we wouldn't release the body for a state funeral. I gave them back a few dead Moffs to bury instead."
"Corellia, then?"
"Raj said Gil would have preferred that anyway."
"You can invite Jason Solo. He's a popular man on Corellia. They'd give him a warm welcome. Heat-seeking missile, maybe."
Dalla didn't sit down. She looked as if she had somewhere else to go.
"Neothel's formally declared the government in exile of the Galactic Alliance on Fondor."
"Who says Mon Cals don't have a sense of humor?"
"And the Fondorians. Forgiveness is a wonderful thing."
"Sit down."
"You said, if I might remind you, that I could have an ale at Myrta's wedding."
"So I did."
"You seem reluctant. Is that because your ex-wife will be there?"
"My ex-wife saw my face today, for the first time in 52 years.
"I've never seen you without the helmet."
"Time was when I said this was my face."
"Seen one, Mondo. Seen them all."
Fett clamped his hands on the helmet's cheekpieces, thumbs under the rim, and twisted slightly as he lifted the helmet clear of his head. Dalla watched in complete silence, with her arms folded. The silence went on a little too long for him to feel comfortable.
"It's not about the scars,"
he said. Dalla looked him in the face, eyelids closing a fraction, the faintest of smiles passing across her lips.
"You scrub up well for an old man, Fett. I bet you broke a few hearts back in the day."
If he had, it was only distant admiration.
"There was only ever Sintas."
"Ah."
"I do a job right, or I don't do it at all."
She understood.
"Ah."
Dalla was as hard as a Hutt's heart on payday. She hadn't made Imperial Admiral in a male-dominated navy by weeping into her handkerchief. But something had cracked that Beskar deck-plating of hers, and her gaze flickered for a moment.
"That's a long time to devote to perfectionism."
"Saves me trouble I don't get paid to handle."
"And trouble that you can't ever buy again."
"Thanks for reminding me."
"Perfection isn't all it's cracked up to be, Fett. Sometimes good enough is all you need. No point surviving if you don't live."
52 years alone. Not what I'd planned. But it could have been 52 years of misery with bad company. I know which hurts less.
"That thing's not your face, actually."
Dalla stopped a fraction short of actually touching his jaw, but he thought she was going to jerk his face toward the mirrored panel and make him look at himself like some gawky, self-conscious adolescent being told he was fine just the way he was.
"And that's not your father's face, either."
Fett had never flinched from his reflection, not out of sore conscience or insecurity, or because it was also Jango Fett's face. He had always been able to meet the gaze flung back at him. Until today. Koa Ney's smug, sterile Kaminoan judgment wormed into his brain. "But what use is your wealth to you now?" Maybe Dalla was right. He was already dead, and beating his tumors had only given him more years to contemplate just how very dead he was.
"You're right. It's mine."
Fett looked at the reflection again, and survived seeing time ignoring his plea to stop, just like he'd ignored the pleas of so many targets.
"And are you another one who thinks it's unfair I got a blessing I couldn't use, like Jaina Solo does?"
"I got my second chance with Legius. I grabbed it."
"But Legius never stopped loving you."
"I didn't make him stop, either."
Dalla stood at the Oyubat's doors, hands in her pockets, and looked up at the cloudless sky.
"Lovely day. I need my exercise. I'm cooped up on a ship most days."
She held out her hand to him, palm down, as if telling a dawdling kid to hang on to her and not get lost in the crowd.
"Coming?"
Fett clipped his helmet onto his belt, feeling it tapping against the small of his back as he moved. It was a strange sensation, like someone trying to get his attention.
"Ready when you are, Admiral."
"It's Natasi,"
she said.
"Natasi, Dalla. A good old Renatassian name."
Kaldabe had seen him without the helmet often enough now. Nobody would turn a hair. Not about the helmet. And not about Admiral Dalla. Bralson, Mandalore. Next day.
"I knew you couldn't leave it alone," said Gotab.
It was early evening, and a haze was settling over the Kalita Valley in the distance. Jaina helped the old man sit down on a smooth, worn outcrop of pale gray granite. Close-cropped grass, ringed by stones large enough to sit on, lent the spot the air of a small arena. Gotab laid his helmet down and shut his eyes, facing into the breeze as if to savor it on his face.
"I need guidance," Jaina said.
"Fett's still too busy. Discussing vital commercial issues with Admiral Dalla, then."
It's not Fett's experience I need. It's yours.
What she said next would either shape the galaxy's future or make Gotab walk off in disgust.
I need to hear this from a Jedi.
Former Jedi. You've got the whole Jedi Council to ask, Jaina. I bet they answer your comm right away.
Maybe. But none of them have seen the galaxy from both sides. I haven't ever spoken to a Jedi who walked away from the Order, but who wasn't a Sith.
I didn't just walk away from the Order. I didn't exercise right of denial. I stopped being a Jedi.
Gotab laughed.
I know the dark side, too. I lived alongside it for too many years, and I can't say that it was always a bad thing. But you're right. I'm no Sith. I'm just a man.
Do you think of yourself as Gotab?
Jaina looked over her shoulder, knowing Venku was around somewhere.
In a way, it just means engineer. I was always good at fixing things. And people.
He took out his lightsaber and held the hilt in his palm, hefting it.
My name used to be Bardon Jusik, but I stopped using my second name in case it got me killed after the Purge. In private, to everyone who matters to me, I'm just Bardica.
Do you have a family?
Yes. But I know what you're really asking. Did I father more little Mandalorian Force users and train them as some kind of armored Jedi? No. I had plenty of adopted sons to look after, and daughters. My wife, may she find rest in the Manda, thought it was for the best.
You could have had children via a donor. Clinics can do clever things.
Mondoade, adopt. I chose the finest family a man could have. Why would we have wanted to conceive a child by donor?
Gotab, Bardica, hadn't struggled to his feet to storm off, nor had he rounded on her. His impression in the Force was relaxed and a little sad, in a bittersweet kind of way that Jaina envied. It was as if he was looking back on a substantially happy life that had nevertheless had its moments of grief. She was trying hard to stay detached from emotions at the moment, because if she felt the good things in life, and there still seemed to be many, then she also felt the pain that reminded her that Mara was dead, that Jason was responsible, and that Jaina had sworn to deal with the problem. Things were fine as long as she held those events at bay and stared at them as if they were a disturbing holovid. The moment she let them slip past her guard and merge with reality, they were almost too agonizing to bear.
"I've got a terrible choice to make," she said. "I have to stop my brother. I think I'm the only one who can. Myrta Gev, of all people, begged me to think twice about killing him and to leave him to someone else. There is no one else."
"Not even Master Luke Skywalker? My, my. So this one's bigger than Palpatine, is he?"
"You sound very bitter about the Order, sir."
"I might be ancient, but I'm not an officer. Bardica, please."
Flying creatures that Jaina couldn't identify wheeled and jinked high in the dusk sky like fighter craft. Gotab watched them in silence for a moment.
"The Order has long been about justifying its own existence, about acquiring and holding power. And from what I see now, Nothing much has changed since my day. I know what I swore to do as a Jedi, and it didn't have anything to do with turning a blind eye to social evils, because the Sith were a bigger evil. But every act of evil we commit creates an environment where the Sith can exist. So Jedi who cut corners, a Jedi Order that cuts corners, forfeit their right to hold the moral high ground. Yes, I'm bitter. That's why I stopped being a Jedi, and just became someone who had Force skills and wanted to do no harm. I've killed, and not regretted it. I've never wrung my hands while whining about my conscience. So if you genuinely want my advice, well, to hear my view, because that's all it is, then, Jaina Solo, we talk purely as individuals who can use the Force. I won't help the Jedi Order.
Jaina was still aware of Venku wandering around the hill, keeping an eye on the two of them. She couldn't see him, but he was there.
"This is about me and Jason," she said at last.
"And you could have stopped him, any of you, if you'd united against him. One Sith can't stand against hundreds of Jedi. Your problem is that he's your own flesh and blood, and none of you have had the courage to do the job. You've been hoping that he'll see the light and stop, so that you don't have to do the dirty work. How many ordinary beings have died, while you made excuses for him because he's family?"
"I know. Okay, I know."
Jaina's gut twisted with guilt again. Yes, if Jason had been any other Sith, with Jason's track record, she'd have cut him down without a second thought. Had anyone tried to redeem Palpatine, or that apprentice of his on Naboo? No. But Vader. Vader had turned out to be family. Uncle Luke had bothered to look for the good in him.
"You're going to give me the speech about no attachment, aren't you?"
Gotob turned to face her and smiled. The light was failing. He still seemed to have a luminosity about him, the sweetness of great age, despite the harshness of his words.
"Attachment? And you inevitably use your powers to serve your own family, or in your case, you fail to use them," he said. "Avoid attachment, and you become an enactor of ritual, a sterile creature unable to truly understand love and sacrifice. There's no easy answer for a Force user, except rigid self-control. And I do not mean avoiding the dark side. I mean not using the Force at all."
"That's not going to help anyone stop Jason becoming a galactic tyrant."
"Lovely job title, that. Galactic tyrant wanted. Apply within."
"You're mocking me."
"You want to know what I would do in your position?"
"Yes."
"I'd kill him. Out of love."
The reply shocked Jaina, because she felt it. He meant it. He wasn't serene. He was full of swirling passions, with hints of darkness in there somewhere. But he'd loved deeply, and still did. It was vivid within him.
"I can't avoid this, can I?" she said.
"It's a lot more common than you think. People kill the one they love all the time. The motive can be anything. But in the end, you end the life you would have done anything to preserve. And then you go on living. You can kill out of jealousy, passion, revenge, mercy, duty, Justice, greed, carelessness. How many people have you killed in combat, in war? More than one, I'll bet. You didn't love those people, but they're no less dead. So the only difference is how you square it with your conscience each day. We're talking about selfishness here. How will I feel? How will Jaina feel?
And the rest of my family.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were talking about the welfare of the galaxy. How foolish of me.
Mind my asking why you killed?
Duty, fear, animal survival, and protecting those I loved. Mostly to eat.
Gotab looked at her and nodded.
It's about all living beings, don't forget that. Not just the ones we recognize as our own kind.
It wasn't getting any clearer for Jaina.
I thought I'd made up my mind so many times. But Myrta brought me up short today. My brother killed her mother, and she still begged me not to kill him, just in case I was wrong.
And what if you let him live, and you're wrong?
Jaina shut her eyes. She could sense Venku still taking a slow walk around the perimeter, a little irritable, growing impatient. The two men didn't live around here. They came down into Kaldabe from the remote north, the Oyubat regulars said. Even Mandalorians didn't drop in on them for a cup of calf and a chat.
They call me the Sword of the Jedi, Jaina said. That's supposed to be my destiny. It's odd how these prophecies start to make sense when it's too late.
Or maybe you're importing meaning into it that isn't there.
What do you think?
A sword is a symbol of justice in many cultures, Jaina. Real justice is blind, and personal feelings don't matter.
But it wasn't about justice. She could suddenly see that. It wasn't so much about what Jason had done as what he would do in the future, cause the deaths of many more beings. There was no possibility that he would stop of his own accord. There was no intellectual or ethical argument about this. It was simply about a continuing threat to life. She realized Gotab was staring into her face. If they didn't activate a glow stick soon, they'd be sitting in the dark. But they didn't need to see each other's faces to know what was going on in their heads.
It's not justice, and it's not punishment, she said at last. It's about saying, this is as far as it goes. I have to stop him now.
It hurts to say it.
Not as much as I thought. But at the moment, it's just words.
Barden finally resorted to a glow stick. He pulled it out of his belt and wedged it into a fissure in the rock to cast a soft yellow light. Then he took off his glove and held up a hand torn by old scarring, and gazed at the puckered skin as if recalling a long-lost, happier time.
"We keep strills," he said. "Hunting animals. The ones with folded skin and six legs that you might have seen around. A friend of mine loved his, but it started going crazy and attacking everyone, including me. He had to shoot it. Poor thing. It had a brain tumor. It wasn't itself. Killing it broke his heart, but he couldn't let it carry on. Not just for everyone's safety, but for the animal, too, because it was utterly miserable. You sometimes have to kill what you love, end their pain, and take it on yourself, because that's what love is, sometimes.
That struck a raw chord in Jaina. Not the thought that Jason might be mad, if that made any difference to what he did, but that he was miserable somewhere in his soul. She thought of the embrace of pain, and the Jason who had survived it, and wondered if his torturer, Verger, had been even more poisonously subtle than anyone had ever imagined. Pain was central to Jason's life now. He thought he couldn't avoid it or forget it, so he used it. And in the end he'd grown to need it, and thought others did too, and that there was a virtue in necessity, because he could do nothing to stop that pain as long as he lived.
Better that it's me then, Jason. Better someone who loves you and knows you than an executioner who just sees you as vermin.
Did that make any difference?
To think I blamed Jason's weakness for getting my other brother killed, she said. It was me who was going to the dark side then.
Forget about you, Gotob said sharply. You have a job to do, that's all. Personally, I never bought this pious nonsense about Jedi violence being fine, as long as it was done with a pure heart. Sophistry, my dear. You're going to kill your brother, because he's a power-hungry, murdering dictator. No one else in your Jedi circle has the moral courage to do it, and you stand the best chance of stopping him. Finish the job like Fett and Bevine showed you. Then you can worry about your motives when the galaxy is safe again, and you have time for the luxury of contemplating the state of your soul.
It was as harsh as a slap in the face, but Jaina felt a cold certainty cascade over her as if she'd been doused with icy water, making her instantly alert. It wasn't the kind of revelation that left you feeling enlightened and uplifted, understanding the galaxy better. It was the sort that said there was only one way out of the burning building if you wanted to live, and you would have to pass through fire. She stood up and stretched her legs.
Thank you, Bardica, she said. I didn't come here to feel better about this situation. I came here for clarity. You've given me that.
It has to be your choice, Jaina, not my orders.
I choose, then, she said. I bet you have grandchildren, yes?
Great-great-grandchildren, actually. 20 of them.
Then, Bardica, I'll do it for them. So they have a galaxy to grow up in.
Her heart broke, and not for the first time. She thought of the Strill, desperate and unhappy, biting those who loved it, and knew the burden of being the sword of the Jedi. Her biggest fear now wasn't that she would have to live the rest of her life with Jason's death on her conscience. She had found a way to replace it with what mattered. Not her personal problems, but the threat to the future of kids like Gotob's great-great-grandchildren, and, yes, even Fett's. She took out her lightsaber and handed the hilt to Gotob for him to admire in the dim yellow light.
"Do you still use yours?" she asked.
"I spar occasionally," he said, "but slowly. As much as a man of my age can. It keeps the joints more supple."
"If you could choose, would you give up your force powers?"
"Yes. All except healing. I justified my existence with that many times."
He activated the blade, and it hummed into life, casting a violet light. He made a few practice passes.
Well made, Jaina.
Can Venku use one?
He has two, actually.
Did you teach him to use them?
Yes, but not for the reason you think.
Gotab shut down the lightsaber and handed it back to her. She could feel Venku getting closer. He appeared over the ridge, the lighter-colored plates of his armor picked out by the glow stick.
Buir, it's time we got you home, he said.
I'm enjoying talking to Jaina, he said. Come on, Kadika. Join us.
The old man smiled to himself.
Funny. Venku's nickname is Kadika. Little Saber. He's a sword too, Jaina. But the sword of the Mandalorians, the one who persuaded us to look after ourselves and not venture out to fight other worlds' wars.
Right then, that sounded like a good idea for anyone. She activated her lightsaber. It was a beautiful weapon. But Fett was right about recognizing it for what it was. Venku walked toward her, and then stopped.
Want to practice?
She asked.
I'm not a Jedi.
You don't have to be.
Okay.
Venku took out two lightsabers, both blue, and looked at them for a moment with a terrible, fond longing that completely shut out everything around him. Whoever had owned those before, Jaina would never know. But she understood that sorrow when she felt it. She took up her stance, saber held two-handed. Bevine's Beskad technique was for another day.
Begin, said Gotab.
Far into the evening, the darkness was illuminated with the bright humming blur of blades. And Jaina was illuminated too, and saw that the only way out of her dilemma was an agonizing but necessary passage through flame.